Let me keep the music theme going here. Gravel-voiced country singer Lucinda Williams. I bet you didn't expect on Sunday morning, Easter Day, to come to church and hear about Lucinda Williams. Lucinda, if you don't know her, pours her heart, her life experiences, and her raw emotions into her music. Several years ago, she wrote a song that plaintively asked the question, "Are you all right?" The song showcases a deep concern and worry for a dearly loved and missed friend or family member, asking, "Are you all right? All of a sudden you went away. Are you all right? I hope you come back around someday. Are you all right? Could you give me some kind of sign? I looked around and you were gone. I feel like there must be something wrong. Are you all right? Because it seems like you disappeared, because I've been feeling a little scared. Are you all right? Do you have someone to hold you tight? Do you have someone to hang out with? Do you have someone to hug and kiss you? Hug and kiss you. Are you all right?" At first glance, it may not sound like it, but this is an Easter song. It may never make it into the United Methodist Hymnal, but it is an Easter song. It is the heart song that led Mary Magdalene and the other Mary out toward the tomb of Jesus in the early morning darkness of the first day of the week, Easter. They were the ones who had stood by on Friday watching his humiliating and excruciating death. So they knew that everything was not all right. But still they prayed that wherever he might be, in the great beyond, he would be all right and would be at peace. For those two Marys, as they trudged along, it was a slow, bluesy, Dixieland, gospel-like song. Little could they imagine that God would take that same song and same tune and give it a pounding, pulsating, rock-shattering, raise-the-dead beat, like the one coming from the car next to you at the stoplight, with the tricked-out monster bass speakers in the back seat that pull you into their rhythm, whether you want to or not, whether you know the song or not. In Easter, God comes to us and says to us and to everyone, "Are you all right? Do you have someone to hold you tight? Do you have someone to hang out with? Do you have someone to hug and kiss you? Hug and kiss you. Are you all right?" And then before we can find our voice, God answers for us, "Don't be afraid. Everything's going to be all right now. Everything's going to be all right." And stunned as we may be, or dubious as we may be, or disbelieving as we may be, we whisper and shout back the only thing we can, "Yes, yes, today, thanks be to God, we're all right." Today marks a contrast between life and death, between hope and fear, between the light and the darkness, between the radiant light of Easter and the thick, unyielding darkness of Good Friday, between the tender breaking of dawn on Easter morn and the dark sky that enshrouded the world on Friday afternoon, between the outlandish and unbridled joy of Easter and the unforgiving horror and heartache of Good Friday, between the bright springtime colors of Easter and the somber drabness of Friday, between the eye-popping news of this day and the blinding, tear-stained darkness and silence of Friday's tomb. The temptation, of course, is to treat life and death, faith and fear, light and darkness as entirely different realities. For some, the good news of Easter is a meaningless and delusional fairy tale, a fanciful but ultimately nonsensical story, masking the truth that the world is simply what we make of it, devoid of any external or intrinsic meaning beyond what we ourselves are able to give it. Conversely, believers see the light as infiltrating every corner and aspect of the world, so much so that we can sometimes be accused of ignoring or minimizing the pockets of darkness that continue to exist in the world even on this day of resurrection. But the truth is that life and death, light and darkness go hand in hand. Easter without Good Friday makes no sense. And Good Friday without Easter is a dead end. And if you can't get your head around anything else, take yourselves back to the celebration of joy that came in the prayer about Katie's new heart. For those of you who don't know Katie is a bubbly, infectious, 30-something old young woman. And as soon as you meet Katie, you know that your life will never be the same again. Katie and her family have lived for 3 decades with the knowledge that she was born with a fragile body. And over time, that body has continued to break down, and with the help of medical personnel, they've built it back up, and it breaks down, and they build it back up, and they break down, and then build it back up, and we have been invited to join them in prayer at several moments in that cycle, until at last, her body reached the point where no more surgeries could help. And the only thing she could pray for, and the only thing her family could pray for, was the gift of a heart transplant. But that heart transplant that now rests inside her body and gives her and her family hope for the future comes at a price, doesn't it? The price of some other grieving family this day who has made the choice to share the heart of their loved one who could no longer be sustained in life, to share the gift of life by letting go of that heart and passing it on to Katie. Death and life literally go hand in hand. And for us this day to greet the risen Christ is to say we worship a God who is able to walk through every valley of the shadow of darkness and death and emerge victorious at the other end. And because of that, we too can face the darkness unafraid. Last Sunday afternoon, a woman named Mindy Corcoran drove to a Jewish community center outside of Kansas City. She was there to meet her father and 14-year-old son who was participating in a talent competition. As she pulled into the parking lot, she spotted her father's pickup truck, but instantly knew something was wrong because the doors on the truck, both sides, were splashed open. And in an instant, in a flash, she knew how very wrong it was when she spotted her father and her son laying below the truck, motionless, having been shot dead in an ambush by a self-professed white supremacist and anti-Semite, who managed to kill none of his intended targets, but two United Methodists and a Roman Catholic. Good Friday came early and unexpectedly to Mindy and her family, but so did Easter and the promise of resurrection. All week long, Mindy has shared her Easter faith and confidence with the world, affirming that, and now I quote, "We don't believe this tragedy was God's will, but we do believe that my son and my father are safe in God's arms. Even in the midst of our grief, we believe that evil will not have the final word and that good will come from this tragedy." Ms. Corcoran does not deny the pain and loss that she has experienced. But she does assert that she and her family and all their friends will get through this senseless act of violence and hatred because they have each other and because they have love rooted in the saving faith of Easter. You see, the power of Easter, the power of resurrection, does not ever erase our Good Fridays. But it does assure us that those Good Friday moments will not prevail and are not what life is really all about. In the face of the world around us, violence in Africa and the Ukraine and the Syracuse City schools, mass kidnappings in Nigeria, a killer avalanche on Mount Everest, fatal drug overdoses on the streets of Syracuse, a capsized ferry in Korea, a controversial plan to transform the city churches. In the face of all that, not to mention the turmoil and worry in our own lives and families, Easter shouts out the message that we are meant to live in peace and harmony with all persons and at all costs, following the lead of the one who suffered, died, and rose again for the sake of all of us. The good news of Easter, that Jesus is risen from the dead, is more than merely an encouraging word, more than an experience of resiliency, persistence, or hopefulness. It is, in fact, life-changing, life transforming news. Look with me again at exactly what the Bible tells us happened that day. It tells us in no uncertain terms that the tomb itself was empty. "He's not here. Come see for yourselves," is how Matthew reports it. For all the ways that resurrection might be explained or described, perhaps it comes down to something as simple as this: discovering that the tomb is empty. Not just the tomb of Jesus in Jerusalem, but the tomb that I have spent a lifetime filling up with all the accumulated refuse and rubbish and debris of my life, like a toxic waste dump. All the discarded, disappointing, distasteful, discredited pieces of my existence, the painful memories, the shameful memories, the blameful memories overflowing, all the things that have weighed me down, slowed me down, poisoned me, and held me back from true living. All of those have been swept up and removed from my tomb. To hear the angelic message that the tomb is empty is to be given a brand new shot at living a new life, a resurrected life, full and free, the way it's meant to be. The story is told of an old woman who claimed that when she prayed, God spoke to her. The bishop was highly skeptical. Everyone knows, he said to himself, that claiming to hear the voice of God is a sure sign of mental illness. Besides, if God were to speak to someone, surely it would not be this old woman, but someone like the bishop himself, who had devoted his life, his entire life, to studying and praying and serving and teaching and preaching about God. But the old woman kept insisting it was true that God talked to her. Finally, the bishop had had enough of the nonsense and decided to put her to the test. "Prove it then," he said to the woman one day. "Prove it. Ask God to tell you about my deepest secrets and my greatest sins. If you come back and tell me what those are, then I'll believe that God speaks to you." Quietly, the woman agreed to the challenge. And the next day she returned, the bishop greeted her with a smirk. "So, did God tell you about my deepest secrets and my worst sins?" "Yes, God did." The bishop's face grew pale. But a bet is a bet. And so he stammered out the question. "So what exactly did God tell you?" The woman hesitated for just a moment, then softly answered, "God said, I don't remember." In Easter, God declares that the past is over and gone. No more can it haunt us. No more can it torture us. No more can it frighten us. No more can it threaten us. No more can it stifle us or twist us out of shape or deprive us of what is, in fact, our new God-given birthright on this Easter day. All the secrets that we have tried to bury, all the failings that we have tried to deny and cover up, all the blame that we have tried to pass and redirect, all that is banished by God forever. For you and for me. Which means not only do I get a new start and not only do you get a new start, but we together get a new start. For every we that you can envision, you and your best friend, you and your worst enemy, Jews and Christians and Muslims and Hindus and atheists, Palestinians and Israelis, Russians and Ukrainians, every we that we can possibly imagine. Resurrection means that the past is over and gone for all creation. And a new kind of life can begin. Thanks be to God. So, the next time you encounter an angel, whether seated astride a dislodged gravestone, or ensconced in an empty, deserted, and so powerless tomb, or driving a 1997 Buick with a music system and bass beat cranked up loud enough to raise the dead, as if the whole world is meant to hear and join in, not just with voice, but with every fiber and muscle and bone in your body, then for God's sake, do it. Rejoice and shout hallelujah. Yes, thank God, we're all right. Yes, thank God, we're all right. Amen.